All right, good to see you guys here tonight. Hope everybody's having a good week. Well, we have been talking about, we spent 2 weeks talking about and defining Gnosticism. We're done with that. That word, of course, meaning knowledge. We started last week looking at agnosticism. What does that word mean? I wondered if y'all got up and left when I asked that question. I turned my back and utter silence. What does agnosticism mean? You can't know. And you remember we talked about two categories of that. Some say, I cannot know. And the other is basically more extreme, like nobody can know. So tonight, what I thought about focusing, I'm going to read something to you real quick, and then we'll get into our lesson. Be opening your Bibles to Psalm 19, please. You can go ahead and be doing that. Psalm 19. And we'll have some other passages to go along with what we're going to talk about tonight. I didn't want to really put a PowerPoint together because I wasn't sure exactly what I was going to do in some aspects. I know what I'm going to do, but anyway. What is real? What is real? Sir? Yes, it depends on who you ask. This is real. The clothes you're wearing are real. The food you ate, or will eat a little bit later, is real. What? Okay, anything that can be proven, all right? Provability. Now, that would that include stuff? Okay, do you guys, what is empirical evidence? Empirical evidence is evidence that can be observed with the five senses. Taste, touch, smell, hear, and see. Thank you. Taste, touch, smell, hear, and see. To some people, that is the only reality. What can be observed with the five senses. Anything beyond that is, to many, purely subjective. Okay, so material objects are real. Do you conduct yourself in a certain, with a certain ethic? Do any of you do that? Conduct yourself in a certain way? Is that real? How many of you, I tried to think of a place that is that probably all of us have heard of, but I don't know, some of you may have been there. Have any of you ever been to Guam? The island of Guam? Do you believe it's real? You've never seen it. So that's just your own reality. Okay. Why do you have faith that Guam is a real place? What? Who said something? Okay, you have a map, you have a globe. Well, okay, what do we call those kinds of people? Eyewitnesses, right? And there are a lot of things that I have not experienced in life, or a lot of places I've not been, and same for you, that we believe is real based on testimony. And it may be, I've been to a lot of those islands in the Pacific. I've been to Guam and Samoa and Fiji and several of those islands out there. They all look, cosmetically, they look the same. So, how do you know there's not just one island out there and people are fooling you? Well, there's evidence. There's provability. Okay, people, there's testimony. There are eyewitnesses. You may have seen a picture of Guam. You may have a map, but you've never used your five senses to smell it, to see it, to touch the things that are on it. But you know that it's real. So there are things that are real in the sense that I can use. That's okay, so I said empirical evidence. I can use my five senses to observe it. But there are things that are real that you cannot do that with. They're not tangible. So that's why I was asking you the question, do you conduct yourself based on a certain morality? Let's say it that. Ethics basically, ethics is what you do, and morality is more like the overarching principles of kind of like why you do them. We all have a certain ethic. All right? Let me read this to you, and then I'll go a little deeper. When unexpected tragedy happens in your life, what do you do? Where do you turn? What can happen to many people is that great uncertainties, doubts, and suspicions toward God suddenly arise in their hearts. Suddenly, all the Sunday school stories you learned as a kid can seem fake. This is an agnostic writing this, by the way. What can happen is not a direct move into atheism. What's atheism? There is no God, okay? It's not I don't know, it's there is none. So what can happen is not a direct move into atheism, denying the existence of God, but a slow and subtle move into a silent agnosticism, denying that truth about God can be known, denying that certainties about God exist, thinking that no one can be confident about spiritual or religious truth. And I thought that was a good kind of opening statement definition of what I want us to talk about tonight. So material objects are real, that you've handled and smelt and touched and all of that, seen. What, let me see here, I've got a bunch of notes written on this paper. All right, so let's talk about truth for a minute. And you've heard me define truth before. What does, do y'all remember what I said about truth, what that word means? Truth is what corresponds to what? It corresponds to what is, what'd you say? Yeah, exactly. Truth is reality, okay? Same thing. Truth is reality. So there is this idea out there that truth, reality, all right, in our terms, we're talking, of course, spiritual truth, spiritual realities, is wholly subjective. Truth is just subjective. And that what that means basically is, what was it, a few years ago, it really got to be big talking about your truth and my truth. That's what subjective truth is. It's subject. My truth is subject to me. Your truth is subject to you. So what is the opposite of subjective truth? Okay, object. And so an easy way to remember what... I'm trying not to misspell again. It's so the way I remember that, an easy way to remember the difference between subjective and objective, an object is like a thing. Truth is a thing. It's reality. It is what it is. That's objective truth. Okay? Subjective, it's subject to my feelings, subject to your feelings, and we all have our own truths that we can live out, which essentially is saying we all can live out our own realities. Let's do this. Psalm 19, one of you please read verses 1 through 6. Psalm 19, 1 through 6. Okay. Jeff, is that stuff real? The heavens declare the glory of God. The firmament, the expanse, shows His handiwork. Okay, so you've got Charles Spurgeon. I wrote a note in the margin of my Bible. Charles Spurgeon, I've got a set of books that he wrote called The Treasury of David. It's a three-volume set on the Psalms. It's got a lot of good stuff in it. But he says, the book of nature has three leaves, heaven, earth, and the sea. And all of that testifies, according to the psalmist, what do the heavens, the earth, and the seas, what do they testify to? God, creator, design. And those things are real. There is an extreme fringe of people that say that everything that we see is an illusion. I don't even want to go there because that's so obviously ridiculous. Anyway, so you've got creation that is real. It's objective. Okay, it's an object. It is it's demonstrable. You can demonstrate that this stuff is here because it's evident. It's tangible. All right? Now I want somebody to read. And this is more towards our point. I mean, all of this is part of the discussion. And I like verse 2 there, Jeff. Read that again, please. Psalm 19:2. Creation never stops talking to us. It talks to us every day, doesn't it? Not, obviously not audibly speaking words to us, but it testifies of itself. Yeah, that's as real as you can get, isn't it? It's raining outside. All right, creation's real. It's objective. Somebody read 7 through 11. You get two things in Psalm 19 that testify to the reality of God. Creation, verses 1 through 6. Revelation, verses 7 through 11. So let's think about creation just a little bit more. So it's objective. It's tangible. It's all of that stuff. It's complex and it's functional. Okay, complexity. We are not, and I know you've heard this kind of stuff before, but think about the function of the human eye or the function of the heart. Any function that keeps your body, the functioning of your lungs, the circulatory system, the muscular system, the skeletal system. You've got 206 bones in your body that are joined together just perfectly. You've got tissue and ligaments and tendons and all of these things that connect everything, and everything's just right. Now, there are at times mutations. There are at times, I guess you could say, defects, maybe birth defects, things like this, that are, I would say probably statistically, they are extremely rare mutations and, what was the other word? Defects. Typically speaking, the human body, when we are, well, and even before we were born, you know, the psalmist talks about that. Jeremiah talks about that. You knew me before I was formed in the womb. But all of that speaks to, if there is this complexity and functionality, something had to put it together. There's something outside of this material existence that's smart enough, intelligent, thoughtful enough to put all of this here and for a purpose. And we've talked about this before too. There are three options for why we are even here. Everything's eternal. Matter has always been and always will be, which contradicts the laws of science. It created itself, which is an impossibility, or it was created by something or someone greater than it. Okay, causality. Something prior to and greater than everything that we can see and touch, observe with our five senses, existed before and had the capacity to put it all together to function so perfectly that we're able to live here. Creation speaks to all of that. That can be known by observation. Okay? Any questions or comments on any of that? Yes, and I think it's more of a fringe side of it because that's not very scientific because there's no evidence for it. But yeah, but God, either way, God's not an option for whatever class of atheists you're talking about. Yeah. All right, so let's dig a little deeper here into verses 7 through 11. Because ultimately what I'm wanting to get to is like this paragraph that I read to you. When tragedy strikes in your life, when something completely unexpected happens, what do you do then? What's real then? It's more than just the physical things around you. All right? So, doubts can arise. Why? What in the world is going on here? Why did this happen? What do I do now? And that can move people, as this person writes and testifies to, agnosticism. I don't deny that God exists, but this has happened to me, and I just don't see it now. I can't hold on to those. And the way this person framed it, I think, is a warning to our Bible class. Listen, guys, if you're a Bible class teacher and you're teaching kids, you're not just telling them stories. This is not fairyland here. This is not once upon a time. These are historical people, historical places, historical events that have been verified time and time again by secular history. So if you're teaching your kids at Bible classes, don't teach them as if it's a Disney fairy tale. It's reality. It's truth. And they need to know more than just the details of the story. How do I take this story and apply it to me? That's the most important part. All right, so it's the law of the Lord is perfect. And what does the law of the Lord do according to that verse? Okay, so soul. God breathed into man, this is Genesis 2:7. He created man from the dust of the ground, and God breathed into his nostrils the what? You guys remember? The breath of life, and man became a living soul. Think about it this way. How many of you have heard the concept of you are a human who has a soul? I've heard that a lot. You have a soul. The Bible tells me that I am a soul. That's the reality of it. God breathed into his nostrils and man became a living soul. So we need to understand that. Well, it's the law of the Lord that converts the soul. But the soul, the internal part of man, okay, this part that animates us, what is it that allows you to function like we're functioning right here, right now? Okay, what is your brain? Somebody tell me, what is your brain? What is that thing? Isn't it weigh like 3 pounds or something? What is it? If you had a brain sitting on a table in front of you, what is it? Tissue, an organ, kind of crudely, it's a pile of meat, isn't it? It's a physical object. So where do you get the capacity then to be reasonable, logical? You've got a 3 or 4 pound piece of meat in your head. Where does the capability of thinking and reasoning and dialogue come from if we are nothing but matter? That's my point. If we're nothing but something that's real, something that's tangible. Now, like kind of like Tammy was talking about, atheism will tell us that we're graduated apes. And actually, it's technically chimpanzees. We're closer to them DNA-wise than we are apes, but who's counting? What was the first chimp who thought it was wrong to steal a banana from the next chimp? When did that sense of, I shouldn't do that, come into the calculation? There's more to us than what's tangible. All right, and there are things that speak to that. What is the function? I've got questions for you tonight. What is the function of morality? If we are just 206 bones covered in muscle and tissue and an outer organ, your skin is an organ. What is the function of morality in a purely materialistic existence, if that's all it is? It would be a defect. Okay? What? Okay, survival. Maybe it's something that, kind of survival of the fittest. You develop this ability to reason over time. Of course, how much time would you need to develop that ability to reason? Would you live long enough to see it happen in your own life? Because we're told it's millions and millions of years that we came from non-thinking, amoral beings to where we are now. Your lifetime, you're not going to come into that realization of morality. It would be a defect, wouldn't it? So we know, but we know that we're more than that. Man is a living soul. God breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul. It doesn't say he gave him a living soul. He became one. So since that is the case, what is the function of morality? Okay. Keeps things from being crazy. We'll go with that for a minute. Is it ever wrong to torture another human being? Is it always wrong? Who decides? There has to be a higher moral plane. I don't know if that's a good word, but there has to be a higher moral standard for that to be determined. Because what did the, and I'll just use a classic example, what did the Nazis do? What did the Doctor of Death do? Was that Goebbels? Who was it in World War II? Mengele, that's right. What was he doing? He was following orders. Well, in the Nuremberg trials, that's what they all said. What? We were just doing what the state told us to do. And, well, what did they do? They tortured people. They gassed people, thousands upon thousands at a time. They would dig pits, line people up, and shoot them. And whether they died or not, they didn't know because they just started burying them. They shot the next line of people, started burying them. There are stories, I've read several books on this, and there are stories of as they're burying them, the dirt's moving because not everybody's dead. Who decides that's wrong? I mean, if you go from culture to culture, that's acceptable in some cultures. But what was the appeal, what was the argument against we were following the laws of the state? There has to be a higher moral law that tells you what you did is never okay. It's never permissible to do what you did. So we're talking about man being a soul, having the capacity to reason, having the ability to have a moral compass, as we call it sometimes. Conscience, yeah. And that's an interesting discussion in terms of atheism. Where did conscience come from? And in terms of if everything's materialistic and we are no soul, we are just physical beings, not just conscience, but where did consciousness come from? Those are two different words. You and I are conscious beings, aren't we? What does it mean to be conscious? Aware, you're awake, you know what's going on around you. But to have a conscience, that's a little deeper. What's your conscience? Your thoughts, your moral, what'd you say? Okay, it can be your guide, your moral compass. Let's go to John chapter 8 real quick. You guys have any questions or comments on any of this so far? We're probably going to pick back up on this next week. I want somebody to read John 8. Make it 28 to 32, please. Okay, hold on just a second there. Then ye shall what? Know. Okay, so the Bible talks a lot about knowledge. All right, keep reading. Then ye shall know that I am the Son of Man. All right, keep going. All right, think about verse 30 for just a second. Okay, you can know this. I'm speaking. I've been taught, verse 28. And as he was speaking, many believed. Now that's why John was written. And the purpose of the Gospel of John, he tells us in chapter 20, verses 30 and 31, these things I have written that you might believe. All right, so go ahead, 31 and 32. Okay, so what's another word for truth? Reality. You shall know what is real, and that reality will set you free. Of course, contextually, he's talking about sin. You keep reading the passage here and that's ultimately what comes out. But John is the writer in your New Testament. John and 1st and 2nd, 3rd John, not so much Revelation. Revelation's its own entity, let's say. But throughout all four of those other books, letters, John is all about knowledge. You can know that you have eternal life, 1st John chapter 5 and verses 11 to 13. because you believe on the name of the Son of God. Well, what is it that produces belief? What is it that produces faith? And I don't want the Romans 10:17 answer. That's right, but that's not what I'm talking about. What is it that causes you to believe something? There's evidence. It can be proven. It's real. Okay? Agnosticism is telling us, and as we talked a little bit last week, it's in the church because there are a variety of things that I've been told over the years that you just can't know. That's agnosticism. But we can know the truth, and the truth will set us free. But notice what he does there in verses 31. Listen to this again in verses 31 and 32. And I'm going to switch a couple words on you. If ye continue in my truth, could you do that right there? Could you make the word truth? Yeah? Then are you my disciples indeed, and you shall know my words, and my words shall make you free. That's saying the same thing, isn't it? What is it that Jesus in John 14, 6 said? He said three things that he was. I am the way, the truth, and the life. Okay, he makes those claims. And there are, I think there are 8 or 9 I am statements in John's gospel. I think it's 8. But anyway, he's making claims that he is what is real. His standard is what reality is. Well, if he's been taught, who taught him? Verse 28, as my Father taught me, I speak these things. Now that doesn't mean that God sat Jesus down and taught him the truth. It's not what that, it's, they are in perfect harmony together. It's as he says in John 10 and verse 30. I think it's John 10, 30. I and my Father are one. They are both God. They both possess the characteristics that make God, God. They know all things. Well, if we know His truth, His reality, we are set free from sin. So even in the face of passages like Psalm 19 and like John chapter 8 and so many others, well, in John's Gospel, John 17, 17, sanctify them how? Sanctify them through what? By the truth, because thy word is truth. It is what is real. It is reality. It's spiritual reality. John chapter 6 and verse 63. The words that I speak unto you, they are spirit and they are life. His truth produces spirituality and it produces spiritual life. Any questions or comments on any of that? Complex, yeah. Yeah. A verse I use a lot. People ask me a question that I don't know the answer to. Deuteronomy 29, 29. Zach's heard that several times lately. The secret things belong to God. There are things that we don't know. Every one of us is ignorant of things. If you think you're not, then you are very ignorant. I mean, that just goes without saying. None of us knows everything. Okay? If you did know everything, you would be up there on par with deity. Sure, but even faith is based on evidence, isn't it? Faith is the substance of things hoped for and what? The evidence of things not seen. I want you to see this word here, and I think we'll end with this. Okay, we just say the word substance. That's how we pronounce it in English, but it's a sub. What does that mean? Sub. Something below or under. And stance. Faith is the substance of things that we hope for. There are things, and it's like, kind of picture it. There are things that we stand on by faith that we're hoping for. Have any of you ever been to heaven? Ever seen it? You remember back, I don't know, 10, 20 years ago, a boy claimed he went to heaven, and there's a book written about it and all that, and then a few years, everybody bought into it. Everybody got the book. Everybody saw the movie. And what happened a few years later? I retract that. It came back, and it's... But there are realities. Okay, let me throw this one out at you as we're closing, so I don't want any questions. We started the book of Zechariah in the live stream today, and Zechariah talks a lot about angels. Do you believe in angels? Revelation says there are thousands upon thousands and 10,000 times 10,000. The book, Hebrews 12 calls them an innumerable company of angels. What is innumerable? You can't count them. But Hebrews 1 tells me that angels are God's beings who go about doing His will. They're messengers. I believe angels are real, but I've never seen one. And if you did see one, you wouldn't know it. So let's do this real quick. Hebrews 13. Let's turn over there. We're going to have to finish this particular lesson next week. Hebrews 13, I want somebody to read verses 1 and 2, please. One of the most abused verses in the Bible. Hebrews 13, 1 and 2. Can you think of anybody in the Bible that unwittingly, I like how the New King James says it. The King James says, have entertained angels unawares. They unwittingly entertained angels. Do any of you know anybody in the Bible that did that? They didn't know that it was an angel that was with them? Abraham is one I think of immediately, Genesis chapters 18 and 19. He didn't know. They appeared as humans. Angels are not humans, and humans don't become angels when they die. They're different beings. They're different classes of beings. Hebrews 13 doesn't tell you that you be nice to people because it might be an angel. Is that what that verse says? That's what a lot of people want it to say. What it says is, do not forget to entertain strangers. And then he makes a point from history, because some did that and they were entertaining angels and they didn't even know about it. So let's say you were to entertain an angel, you wouldn't know about it. People want verses to say things that they don't say because they believe something before they ever even get to that verse. And then, well, that just confirms it. There's angels everywhere, and I've had them at my table probably. No, you haven't. Do not forget to entertain strangers. Yeah, that's a command. Hospitality. No time for questions. I hate that. We'll pick it up next week. Thanks, guys.